Welcome back to On the Mic. I'm Marley MacDonald, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, Susie Cassard. Susie is an eating disorder survivor, and after her long journey battling the illness, she has used her experience to coach others through their challenges with food. Eating disorders are the most deadly mental health illness, and a critical topic that necessitates more frequent discussion. When asked about their body image, 53% of 13-year-old girls report feeling unhappy with their bodies, and this number continues to grow at a shocking 78% by age 17. Although more attention has been drawn to body image and eating disorders in recent years, there is still an urgent need for resources and education to combat them. Susie is making a significant contribution to changing the current reality and is going to give a very personal perspective of dealing with an eating disorder today. Please welcome to the show, Susie Cassard. Susie, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
Hi, Marley. Thanks. I am so honored to be here. I'm doing great.
Amazing. Thank you. I'm so happy to have you here. And I'm especially grateful to have you here now. It's Eating Disorder Awareness Week, which is just a reminder of this critical topic that we should always be discussing. And you have a very personal understanding of eating disorders, and now you're very involved in helping others with them. So you have a lot of insight and understanding into this topic, to say the least.
Thank you.
Can you start? I know I'm going to kind of have to make you look back in time here, but just kind of taking me back to the start of where your initial struggles with the illness and your eating disorder began.
Ooh, such a good question.
I know. I'm kind of making you really go back, but I don't know if it was something that, like, there was an initial spark that started it for you, or if you'd always struggled with food and body image.
When I was a kid, I was not at all food concerned at all. And then when I got to be a preteen, I wanted to fit into the images that I saw in 17 magazine.
Yeah.
And that my friends were talking about. And of course, puberty was starting. So I was starting to grow and develop, and I was getting some fat pads.
Uh-huh, exactly.
You know, and that was very concerning to me, because I didn't see it as, oh, my feminine parts of me are developing, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I saw it as, I'm getting fat, that's scary. And now I'm not going to be like those girls I see in the magazines, which are socially acceptable.
Exactly. And it's like seeing these girls in the magazines, it's hard to realize that having extra fat during puberty and having these features that women need to survive, but it makes us think that we shouldn't have those. And it's not natural, when in reality, we really do need them. But I think it's definitely hard when society's showing us people who have these perfect, quote unquote, perfect features. It's hard to accept our changes.
I agree. And you know, we see them as beautiful.
Exactly.
So we measure ourselves against that standard. And we also don't realize that most of those are airbrushed. They're set up that way. And that's a very tiny percentage of people who fit that mold.
I know. But it's interesting how they take a small percentage of people who fit that. But since it's the only thing we see, it's amplified on a huge level. It makes it seem as if, since we don't look that way, we're the minority and, you know, we're not fitting the right thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's definitely really interesting. So throughout the years that you've had an eating disorder, I know you said that you struggled for a while. It wasn't a short period of time. Was there any periods where things would start to get better? Was there an oscillation between, you know, getting better and then struggling again? Or what did that timeline look like for you?
Well, so the timeline was, I started by dieting.
Okay.
And I tried everything in the book. Everything you read about.
Oh, wow. Okay. And there's so many. So you probably had to go through a lot of those.
There were, including crazy diets, like, you know, watermelon only.
Oh, no.
Things like that.
Jeez.
It was awful. But I was on this path. And I just want to speak to a person's worthiness, our feelings of worthiness, because I see that as really playing big for me when I was going through this. But what happened was, I was playing with all these diets and the desire to be thinner and smaller. and fit in. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I was in my early 20s that I fell off a cliff into serious eating disorders.
Okay. Do you know what do you think made this change where you had been dieting, but the more serious change, was there a certain trigger to that?
There was an incident that threatened my independence and my individuality. And it was a bad breakup with somebody I really cared about. But there was a lot of other things around that, too. I was in my early 20s at the time.
Yeah.
So I was in college.
Exactly. So many changes. It's not a very super stable period of life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's what pitched me into a full-fledged eating disorder, which at the time was bulimia. And later turned into anorexia / bulimia.
Man,
and it lasted 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were there certain people or contributing factors that made you decide to start making these changes in your life?
Such a good question. You know, I was in therapy almost the whole time. I was in such a place that I was seeing a therapist 3 times a week just to stay glued together. At that time, there weren't the experts and the helpers that there are now, mm-hmm. who know a lot about it. So was there one thing? It was very gradual for me. But one thing that did happen is there was a therapist who would give a talk once a month about eating disorders, and I would attend.
Okay.
She was, you know, somebody who was helping us recover. And I wasn't ready to go into that. One of the reasons was because every time I heard about a recovery process, the idea was that I would gain weight. I was told I would gain weight, and I was so glued to this weight thing that it felt really threatening, incredibly threatening. So I went to hear her, and after about 3 or 4 times, I decided to seek her out as a therapist. And she was incredibly effective. I worked one-on-one with her. And then I joined a group, her group, which was small. And everybody in it had a different type of eating disorder.
Okay.
Well. It was all sizes and shapes. And through the group process, I fully recovered.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm so glad you found a method that was successful for you. Do you think that deciding to start recovery, you said you started going to this group, was there a point at which you said it's worth the sacrifice of the way I want to look and it's worth choosing to gain weight? Or how did you decide that you were ready to start this process?
You know, it was very scary having an eating disorder. It was extremely scary, and I felt so ashamed and so embarrassed and so isolated. And so when I joined this group, I didn't feel so isolated anymore.
Wow, yeah.
You know, and I can hear other people's stories and got a lot of support from different people. We were all working toward the same idea. And so what was the question again?
Oh, yeah, I was asking how you decided to make that choice, since it's so difficult when you're in the grips of an eating disorder to say, I'm willing to do the one thing this voice is telling me not to do, which is gain weight. And what made you decide you were ready for that?
Okay, so the answer is it was support, but it was also that I was so miserable. And I knew that I was hurting myself badly. It got to the point where I just didn't want to do it anymore, but I just didn't know how to stop.
Okay.
Because it's a serious addiction. It's like any addiction. The thing about food is we have to keep eating.
Exactly.
So we can't go cold turkey and quit food, right?
Uh-huh.
Like you can with some other addictions.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. And looking back at when you had your eating disorder and you were in that really bad place, do you think initially, was it like a coping strategy in that you were saying you had this terrible breakup? What did it make you feel better at first, and then it just eventually went into this miserable place? Or do you think it never actually really made you feel any better?
It was all a big cover-up of misery. Yeah. I was feeling miserable, and this was distracting me.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that I would do it, and the longer it went on, the less I was aware of what my true feelings were. So I actually lost contact with my inner self and my true feelings, that had I faced them with support, I'm sure, you know, there would have been a much quicker recovery sooner.
Got it. And I'm also curious, at this time, were friends and family, were they picking up on some of this, and were they commenting, or what was the role of kind of those important people in your life?
Good question. So being an older adult at the time, you know, it was like 25 to 40, something mm-hmm. like that. I would say that it was really when I got into the anorexia phase, I got extremely thin. And I myself could feel that my heart was not doing well. It was really scary. And of course, that's when people gathered around and said, you know, we're taking you to the doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did get a medical checkup, which is extremely important, mm-hmm. If no other reason to rule out any other cause and to point you in the right direction. But yeah, so, you know, bulimia is a sneaky eating disorder because you're hiding. You're going to all ends to hide.
Yeah.
So I think what happened is I thought I was hiding, but I think other people knew.
Can you give us a little more information for listeners who aren't familiar with bulimia? What do some of the habits and what does it look like for somebody who has bulimia?
Well, bulimia looks like binging.
Okay, yeah.
And then some type of purging, you know, throwing up or diuretics or overexercise, that kind of thing.
Got it.
You're trying to get rid of the food that you ate that you don't feel good about.
And you were saying you felt like you were in hiding. So were you really just trying to make sure people had no clue that you had your experience? You were experiencing this, and were you trying to make it look as if you had a great relationship with food on the outside?
Yeah, yes, because when I was around people, I would eat quote-unquote normally.
Okay.
Then I would escape to my den to do the binging.
So it's very lonely and isolating. You're on your own in that struggle.
That's exactly it.
Wow, jeez.
Yeah, and the longer you're isolated, the more self-referencing your thoughts get. You start to not allow other people's thoughts in, and then you're recirculating. There's an element of repetitive unpleasant thoughts, ruts, also called OCD, to eating disorders. There can be.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know about that. That's really interesting that it plays a role in eating disorders.
Yeah.
Wow, got it. And so it becomes kind of a cycle, it sounds like what you're saying, of having a binge and then feeling bad about it and then wanting to do that again because you're feeling bad about it. Is that kind of like the compulsive aspect to it?
That's exactly true. But there's another aspect I don't think people really know is that, you know, that the whole act of doing that is the only time I would feel a sense of peace in my life.
Wow.
I would feel a temporary sense of peace because I would get a high.
Okay.
I would get a high, and then, of course, the high would fall flat.
Exactly.
And be back to square one.
Got it. So, yeah, it's so similar to other addictions when you think about alcoholism or drug addictions. It's that similar thing. If you have this one very high, and then the rest of your life feels at such a intolerable low, mm-hmm. sounds like. Okay, got it.
And I was doing a lot of things in my life at that time. It wasn't like my life was on the skids or anything. I was having a lot of interesting things going on in my life and learning and growing and contributing and had a business going and, you know, doing some worthwhile things.
Was it harder to do those things, though, as you were battling eating disorders? Or do you think you were able to kind of put those out of your mind as you were functioning in everyday work and life?
I think I sort of had them separated.
Okay.
Here's my daily life and my day, and here's what happens at night. And this is my addiction.
Okay. Got it. All right. Well, thank you so much for looking back on that part. I know it can be harder to talk about some of the really terrible parts, it sounds like, of the eating disorder. But moving on to now that you're recovered, and you told me as we were talking before this interview, you've been recovered for about 25 years. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That's outstanding. And so I want to first say congratulations. That takes so much work. And yeah, unfortunately, a lot of people haven't gotten to that place yet. So it's really it's hopeful to see, too, that there are people who recover, because sometimes I think we only hear about the really terrible sides of eating disorders, but people forget that there's also another side to it and there's a way out. So I'm curious, now that you are fully recovered, does it feel as if eating and body image, is that something that doesn't even cross your mind anymore? Or is it still something that you really struggle with, or you have to think about, what does it look like now?
That's such a good question.
Thank you. Sorry for all the, I know it's deep ones. You really, I'm getting you thinking.
I love it. I love it. These are the kinds of conversations that matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of eating, that has really changed a lot. I'm in control. I'm in control. And there's times, like everybody, where I'm under more stress or I'm more nervous or whatever, and I notice my eating habits might be less good.
Okay.
But I'm never, ever, ever wanting to binge or, you know, grossly overeat like I did before, nor am I ever wanting to dramatically restrict, which, you know, those things actually come out of stress.
Okay.
Stress is at the root of all of this. And that's one thing I didn't realize until just a few years ago when I became educated on what the research is. I'm involved with a research group and with people who are all working with this about the role of stress and what it really is. Because this underlies all addiction.
Yeah, so it kind of becomes, you rely on whatever somebody's coping mechanism is, and for you being food and manipulating how your eating habits, it always is triggered by stress.
Exactly.
Seems like, okay, got it.
Yes. The second part of your question about body image. So now, heading into my more senior years, I am going through body image changes because I'm older. I'm I still think I'm a teenager.
That's great. You know, always, you know, they say age isn't a number, it's just a mindset. So you can just embrace the teenager
mind.
That's great.
I don't know. But So the first time somebody called me ma'am, I was like, what?
Whoa, geez.
Yeah. And then, but you know, then the hair starts getting gray. Okay. You have to accept who you are in a new way and really, really appreciate the wisdom and the life experience and what it means to be an older adult.
Yeah.
Because I have a new role now and things are different. I'm not, you know, I'm active person. I'm not I'm not debilitated.
Got it.
And I have no chronic illnesses.
Yeah, that's so really good.
Yeah, so I'm very fortunate that way. But yes, it's definitely challenging my body image from a younger person to an older person.
Yeah, I can see that because even people who are younger, they have those, more commonly have the struggles with, you know, weight and accepting how their body looks. But also, I'd say it's almost every person I feel like I talk to as people getting older, and so many women in my life also struggle with just the idea of getting older. For some reason in our society, it seems like it has such a negative connotation when really it's just, you know, you have more experience, more wisdom, like you were saying, but I can definitely see how it would be difficult to be battling both of those things, you know, the body aspect and then also the challenge with accepting new changes in your life as well.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm really comfortable in my body now.
Yeah, okay.
I accept it. I accept the changes. But I'm very conscious of how other people view me or older people. And I think it's time that that people, the baby boomers, you know, really, really express ourselves more than we do. And or maybe we do and I'm just not noticing. But somehow it would really be great if society could shift a little and elevate older people as being viable.
Yeah,
in different,
exactly.
In a different way.
There needs to be, there's so many things too that people try to do to fight it, whether it be Botox or hair dye. And
yeah.
Not that those things on their own are bad, but I think there's just so many people trying to push against it. And it's like, as long as you fight it and you do those things, you won't be old. But it's like, it's not a bad thing to accept this. We don't have to have such a negative image of it.
It isn't. Actually, it's an incredible time of life because
yeah.
you can, and some of the questions you've asked me, you know, to look back and you have a different perspective and see people in a much more compassionate way, much more empathy for what people are going through, you know, empathy for myself, for how I got here.
Wow, yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And you have used your personal experiences, and like you're saying, looking back on things and using your struggles to help others, and especially through your life coaching and your general education and advocacy for eating disorders and all of these topics. So I'm also curious, through doing this life coaching, even though it's so rewarding to be able to help others and use your experience for the better, do you ever find that it also comes with difficulty because you're forced to look back on these times of your life that might be triggering or hear from others' experiences that could also trigger some of your own thoughts?
For sure, that would have happened when I was less recovered.
Okay.
Like within the first 5 years, I'd say. But now, no, I'm not triggered anymore by those things because I'm not, I understand it. I've embodied the changes. Like
yeah.
it's part of me where I could never go back. It just wouldn't be in me.
Wow. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear a little bit more about you as a life coach and what you're doing now. How did you decide to start getting involved in this? And when was the point that you decided that you're ready to take that step to start helping others?
Mm. Well, this is back in 99. It was the year I was fully recovered. I decided that I was actually a professional organizer.
Okay, got it.
I was helping people in a corporate world. I was going from desk to desk helping people, and I realized that I wanted that organization is sort of a topical thing. What you're really doing is you're finding out what matters to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had that background experience to kind of launch into this new career.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to add it on to my professional organizing business. And then I was so in love with coaching that I just realized I just want to coach people. I want to help them with their own personal growth. And I already knew after 25 years of struggle and then recovery, I already knew that was really close to my heart to help
yeah.
people. Because as we talked before, it's a miserable way to live. It's a trap.
Yeah.
And it seems impossible to get out of it when you're in it. It's very confusing. It's very scary to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't really know how to respond because it's very awkward for people.
Yeah, and you have to, it feels like you're pushing against everything that your mind is telling you to do, even though it's not your own voice, it's the voice of an eating disorder, but it feels so counterintuitive to make a decision in your life to say all the thoughts of don't gain weight and control your food and all of those things. It's hard to say, okay, I'm going to do exactly the opposite in order to get better. It feels like you can't see that light at the end of the tunnel.
You can't. And then when they tell you, well, you're probably going to gain weight, you're like, eh, out of here.
No, thanks. Yeah.
yeah.
exactly. Where it really is a necessary component for a lot of people. I know some eating disorders can be treated without that, but there's definitely a connection between the mental and physical factors of how the disease is treated.
It is. And one thing to realize is there really is no separation between mind and body. We're a body-mind, a
yeah.
mind-body. We are one. Everything is integrated in the body. Every part is shaking hands with every other part. You can't separate it out the way we've been taught. Like when you go to a doctor, the doctor does this one, and this one is this system, and this is the heart doctor, and this is the lung doctor. And we learn to separate our parts. But we're actually one holistic unit that's acting as one unit. And we are a unit of survival. We are biologically wired to survive. And so this is really our survival self. The stressed self is all about survival.
Wow.
And that's
yeah.
a very important part that is not being talked about very much yet. It's impacting the way that health practitioners, maybe not necessarily doctors, but health practitioners and trauma therapy especially are going about things now.
Wow, Yeah, it's super interesting, especially how another thing I know for eating disorders is when people are restricting their food for a while, then their body goes into starvation mode. And because their mind is telling them, I'm not getting food, it's not available. It's like a survival tactic to stop having those hunger cues, because it's as if we're in the wild and there's no food source available. But those things really work together. And so you have to allow your mind to know you're getting food and it's available in order for your body to also respond to those hunger signals.
That's very true. Yeah. And also to know that we can nourish ourselves and we can control how we nourish ourselves. What happened with me is, okay, I was fully recovered, no more eating disorder, but I was gaining a little bit of weight. Well, that was okay. But I realized I felt out of control, not out of control like eating disorder. But that's when I developed the program that I teach now, which I call the crossover method, which is a way of changing food habits permanently. So not a diet, not restriction. It's a very abundant way of shifting habits into better habits.
Yeah.
Which never, it's a progressive system, so it always gets better. We always get more and more control. I've also found, we were talking about aging, you have to be able to shift eating habits.
As you get older, responding to your body's changes.
Exactly.
Wow, okay, got it. Have you noticed it's been a challenge to shift those eating habits, or has it gone well for you?
I think the worst of it was when it first hit me, because, I mean, up until I'm 67, so up until 66 and a half, I could eat tons.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, it's like things changed.
Just one day you woke up and you're like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah. I need to eat less.
Okay.
And maybe up the nutrients.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. And that's a more planet-friendly way to eat, actually.
Wow. Okay.
I'm really into everything I do is planet-friendly, because we're in a place now where that's absolutely number one.
Yeah, that's amazing, because I know a lot of people, it's all on our minds a little bit, but it often falls to the back of our minds. And so to be making even just one person changing the habits to try to help the planet is making a difference. You know, if we can all make those little changes, it'll add up.
It really does. And food is an area that has a big impact. Our consumer dollar can have a huge impact. That's how we can do it on an individual level.
Wow. Okay.
By choosing things that are good for the planet and regenerative.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. So shifting over to a bit of a different topic, I'm hitting you with everything today. But for people who don't have a lot of understanding of eating disorders, I think everyone has heard of it or kind of has a very surface level understanding of what one is, but there are a lot of misunderstandings that are accompanied by this. And for example, one of them I've heard is, for people who have eating disorders, people ask, why don't they just eat? As if there's such a simple answer. And I'm curious, how would you respond to some of these misconceptions, such as this one?
That's funny. That did happen to me too.
Oh, wow. Really? Like someone told you, like, just eat, it's simple.
I was in the dentist's office, and I was in a chair, you know, with the bib on and the whole thing. And a woman came in, and she said, have you tried this weight-gaining shake? And it was sort of like, basically, she was saying, why don't you just eat a sandwich?
Yeah.
Like, the problem is that you're not eating enough.
Jeez. It's like, wow, thank you. That, all my problems are solved with that.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you think that we just need more education about topics like eating disorders and letting people know about them? Or how can we respond? If somebody who is struggling gets a comment like this, how should they face it?
Yeah, well, it was really demoralizing for me at the time because I was already embarrassed about it.
Yeah.
There's two questions in what you asked. The major piece of understanding that people don't really get is that it isn't actually about food. It's being played out, the conflict is being played out in the food arena. And food is something, it's a survival need, so we have to work with food, and there's a lot of myths and misunderstandings about food and what it does with our bodies. But the real problem, the real trouble is that it actually goes back to our sense of worthiness. Most of us grow up, even in the best of circumstances, we grow up in a society that is constantly hitting us with messages that we are not good enough. We are not worthy enough the way we are, the shape that we were born to be. Even the gifts that we have naturally sometimes are put down.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just a way of trying to almost make ourselves better by fixing our food, even though it's actually making it worse. But yeah, it's always just trying to be a better person, to feel better about yourself, and not actually about, oh, I want to change the way I eat. It's more about, I want to make myself better.
It is. It's, yeah. We're trying to fix a problem within ourselves of disconnection from ourselves.
Yeah.
And we're not taught, I mean, it's just, you never hear that. We don't see role models who are out there in the public eye talking about connecting to yourself.
Yeah.
In the way that we see the commercials,
exactly.
Which disconnect us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really where the big changes take place, is understanding, connecting with our heart. And the other big piece is stress, like I was saying, is we don't understand. I'll put it this way. The nervous system is a gigantic player in all addiction and all these feelings we're having. It's the nervous system. And I can go into that more if you want.
Yeah, I would love it. I'm not super familiar with how those are connected, so I would love to know more.
Well, the nervous system is all about survival. That's its number one
okay.
job. And so when, you know, it's kind of like all of us are very perceptive, whether we know it or not. Our body is constantly monitoring both the external environment around us and the internal environment. It's looking for a threat to protect us. And so if the external environment is threatening, for example, driving a car can feel kind of threatening because
yeah.
sometimes there's people weaving out of traffic, or it can be, you're really on edge, you're in survival. It puts us into a frame of, into a victim mentality of lack and limitation, anxiety, being frightened, being overly hypersensitive, and it goes up the ladder. In the more we feel threatened, the more we feel those emotions correspond with our stress chemicals. The feeling of threat in our body means that our body is secreting stress chemicals to protect us. Those chemicals, like adrenaline and cortisol, make us feel uncomfortable, so we'll take action. We start to feel anxious, and those are stress chemicals.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really fascinating. Where, Ted, do you learn this, or how did you start to seek out this kind of information during your recovery?
Okay, this is an interesting part of the story.
Okay, got it. I'm ready for it.
As soon as I was really complete with eating disorders, just a couple years later, I started having a lot of physical body pain.
Okay.
And First, I had 6 operations.
Oh, wow.
2 back, 2 hand, 2 feet. Because I thought the problem was that, that's what it was. It was a physical problem. You could see it on the x-rays, et cetera. But I didn't get better after that. I still had a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. And so I sought help from somebody named Dr. David Hanscom. He has a course called the Doc Journey, the Direct Your Own Care Journey. He's a retired complex spine surgeon who discovered that pain was actually coming from the mind first.
Wow.
And then the body was reflecting that. And that's different. And I'm talking about chronic pain.
Okay.
Without a cure. I'm not talking about acute pain, like you broke your arm and now your body's in repair mode.
Yeah, that would be a more just physical thing. But that continued pain over time that didn't have really any explanation at first for where it was coming from, that was the mental.
That's exactly right. And we have a lot of, there's something called medically unexplained symptoms. It's a diagnosis that people get.
Okay.
But these stress chemicals, when they're elevated, as in chronic conditions, they, that our tissues become compromised. it actually creates imbalance in the body. And that's where all chronic disease comes from.
Wow.
Stress chemicals causing inflammation, causing disease. So it's the same thing for mental disorders as physical disorders.
Wow, that's really, really interesting. I hadn't realized that. I knew there was a mind and body connection, but I really didn't realize it was that directly connected to each other. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of researchers and scientists now on the cusp of bringing this more into the mainstream. And a lot of trauma therapists are educated. It's something called polyvagal theory, polyvagal informed therapy, that is really fantastic because it addresses everything about the stress, the fight or flight. And then the one thing I will say is that a more extreme form of stress, we go into freeze mode.
Okay.
That's where we're just, we're so scared and so frightened and so threatened that we collapse.
Yeah, we just stop everything.
Yeah. And I believe anorexia, there's parts of that with anorexia where you feel like you don't have control over anything in your mm-hmm. life and you're trapped. And if it's really, really painful and threatening to you, depending on the person's sensitivity, you will become immobilized. It happens in nature. Immobilized, I mean, you can't help yourself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't feel like there's any way you can take a step forward. You're just kind of accept this as how things are going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. You're sort of just there.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. But you don't feel a sense of personal power at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. And for people who are listening to this or in general who think that they might be struggling with an eating disorder or disordered eating symptoms, where do you think is the best first place or first step that somebody can make when they think they're struggling?
When they think they're struggling, I guess I would say go to the doctor first and get a physical exam.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that there's not an organic reason
okay.
for anything else going on or something that needs treatment physically.
Yeah.
Oftentimes they can refer you to the right person. For people that feel like they want to go straight to an eating disorder therapist, Psychology Today, psychologytoday.com is a fantastic database of therapists in our area, in all areas. But there's quite a few right on Mercer Island and in our area
wow.
that specialize in this.
Perfect. Okay, so we have amazing local resources right here.
We really do.
Yeah. So although there are some people who may be sure that they're struggling with an eating disorder, at the same time it can be kind of unclear because I think to a certain extent, every woman, also many men, have struggled with negative thoughts about their body or maybe just being part of diet culture in our society. So how do you think people can distinguish between just being living in this place where, to a certain extent, everyone's going to struggle with this and then actually having an eating disorder?
Well, so I think that on a less severe level is what we're talking about people are already going through. So many people have body image issues where they're not really seeing themselves accurately. I think it's kind of a human thing in some ways.
Exactly, yeah.
But that's like a low level, I won't call it eating disorder, but it's the precursor.
Yeah.
So the sooner you can get treatment, the sooner people learn about how stress is affecting them,
mm-hmm.
the sooner that they will have more control over food. And the sooner you can stop that progression. A lot of times it doesn't progress. There's a statistic, something like, I don't want to misquote it, but there is a percentage of people who go from normal dieting to eating disorders.
Okay.
And I think dieting and dieting culture is a big gateway to eating disorders.
Exactly. And trying so many different diets, like you were saying, you had kind of been in that loop of, let me try this and this, and eventually it also progressed into something even worse.
In my case, it did, and all the elements were already there before it became an eating disorder.
Okay.
It took just one incident to push me off the edge. But it was actually a lifesaver in so many ways. My recovery, the whole process and my recovery and where I'm at now, I think that all of these trials and tribulations we all go through, we all do in our lives. They might look different and be different, but all of them added together make us who we are. And the most important thing is to really connect with our heart and understand that the self-critical voice is causing a lot of these issues for us, and move into a space of compassion. And that takes some work, some soul searching, and moving through the knots that we have in our consciousness about who we are and what we should be.
Exactly. And like you were saying, it's certainly not a good thing that you had to go through this really hard experience of you're struggling with an eating disorder, but in another regard, you probably wouldn't be the life coach and advocate you are today if that hadn't happened to you. So it seems like everything happens to a reason, for a reason, in another way. So at least you can come out with a positive and having a whole new mission after suffering from that.
That's right. You know, all of us have a purpose. We all have a purpose. We all matter. We don't realize it, or maybe we don't see it. It can take time to unfold. And if we can take the issues that we're being faced with and learn how to untie those knots and unravel them and understand ourselves, that's the key. Because now we really have something. We have something special, and we're more freed up to live our purpose.
Wow. Yeah. Do you have anything else on the horizon right now that do you have any more missions or goals to pursue? You've already done so much in the area of helping others, but do you have anything else planned right now, or are you going to just keep on with what the amazing things you're doing?
Thank you. Oh, what a good question. I'm going more deeply into my coaching practice and learning more about sacred listening, appreciation, all of that, consciousness, learning more about quantum physics and how that relates to us as humans. So I'm growing and moving in that direction, and I feel like it's just going to bring more into my coaching practice. I'm a coach. That's what I am. Yeah. And I'm here to help anybody that needs help.
How can people find you if they want to reach out to you or start one of your programs? How should they reach you?
Oh, thank you. Well, I have a website, or they can just email me directly. The website is my name, which is SusanCassard.com. And my email is SusanCassard@gmail.com. It's SusanCassard at Gmail.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I know just from recording this episode and sitting down today, I know people just listening to this alone is going to help so many people. I think simply hearing about it and normalizing the conversation can make a huge difference. And like you said, limiting those precursors that can lead up to something more intense, like an eating disorder, just starting to let people know about how we can address some of these issues early to prevent people from going through the same thing is so important. And that will make a huge difference in the grand scheme of things.
Thanks, Marley. You are just an amazing example of somebody who has also taken your experiences, and now you're bringing it out onto the airwaves and into the public also to help.
Wow, thank you so much. Yeah. That's kind of you to say, but you're a huge role model for me, and I hope that one day I can make a small difference in a small percentage of what you're doing. I would love. So thank you so much for joining me today, Susie, and I love getting this chance to talk with you.
Thank you, Marley. I appreciate you so much. Keep on keeping on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in to this interview with Susie Cassard. Eating disorders are like any other addiction. They need to be treated seriously. If you are struggling with eating or body image, talk to your doctor and let your loved ones know when you need help. You can find more information at nationaleatingdisorders.org. If you want to talk to Susie or just learn more about her, you can find her at SusanCassard.com. I'm Marley MacDonald, and you're listening to On the Mic.